is Steve Dale's Other World. I am so excited about this. You know, I was talking to a friend on the phone and I said, I've got to get off the phone because I've got to go on the radio or record a podcast about bowling with rhinos. And he said, doing what with what? And that's what we're talking about, bowling with rhinos. So I can imagine you being in one bowling alley and going, down the lane goes your ball. And a rhinoceros in the next bowling alley over, but I don't think it's quite like that. From the Lincoln Park Zoo, Caitlin O'Brien, Alicia Darst. Welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Well, it's an honor to have you. There's so much I want to talk about. I want to talk about the plight of wildlife, specifically the rhinoceros, and why your grandchildren or people who would be of that age may never see outside zoos rhinoceros anymore. They may not exist, and we'll talk about that. In fact, some species have already are really close. The Sumatran and Javan rhino, They're just about gone, you know, so we'll talk about that. I also want to talk about the Lincoln Park Zoo. I also want to talk about the event itself, and there is a lot to talk about here. So I think we start with talking about the rhinoceros. So, Alicia, the rhino is disappearing. I want to start on the back end of that. So we'll talk about why that's the case and all of that.
Okay.
Why should we care? I mean, we don't have rhinos in our backyard.
We don't.
We don't depend on them for our livelihood. So what does it matter?
Well, you know, even though we're far away from Africa and Asia, it's something you should still care about because rhinos are a keystone species and they're very important to the environment that they live in.
Let's talk about that because I don't know that people understand. It is like bowling pins, actually, right?
Yes.
You know where I'm going.
Yes, exactly.
So one is knocked down and then ping, ping,
in turn,
ping.
You're getting rid of everything else that lives in that same habitat.
Explain that.
So rhinos are what's called mega vertebrates or megafauna. So they're a really large animal that live in this habitat. In Africa, they live in open grasslands and savannas. So they help to, you know, clear brush and prevent forest fires and all different sorts of things in that habitat. They spread seeds and help pollinate by, you know, defecating in different areas. So they're spreading plants around an environment. So basically anything that lives in that savanna with them, the cheetahs, the buffalo, the antelope, the birds, the insects, and all those other plants are being helped by rhinos being in that environment. And it's the same in Asia,
so
in the
jungles. So are people, though, in Africa. So if there are no forest fires or fewer of them, then people who live there benefit as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And rhinos being around, they do. They help the community. A lot of the African people are pastoralists, so they do farming and agriculture. So the cattle and everything like that share the same habitat as the rhinos as well. So they're kind of grazing in the same areas. So by spreading those different plants around, it also helps the local communities.
Alicia, why are they disappearing?
Also because of people, unfortunately. We are their largest threat. Habitat loss is a main factor to that, as well as the big one, which is poaching.
Yeah. And I want to talk about the big one being poaching. Caitlin, why is that the big one?
Well, poaching in the last decade has increased by 9,000%. So obviously that's significant. And people poach them for their horns, which some people think it's bone, but it's not. It's just keratin. It's just like our fingernails, our hair. It's just really condensed. And there's traditional beliefs in Asian medicine that it holds magical powers and can cure anything from a cough to cancer. It doesn't. It's the same as biting your nails. It's not going to cure anything.
Well, so I want to stop that and make a big point out of that. So if you have a cold or if you're really sick with cancer, you could bite your own fingernails, eat them, gross, and that's that's the same effect as that mulched up rhino horn, paying, as they do, a lot of money for it, hoping that it will help.
Yeah, so a large rhino horn can actually be worth over $500,000 because they chop it and grind it into those small consumable portions to magically cure things it's not going to actually cure. So, yeah, poaching, it's the biggest issue, and it's progressed so rapidly because of technology. It's great in some aspects, but now poachers are getting more intelligent, whether it's having better weapons or having more money and paying off the people who are actually supposed to be protecting these rhinos.
And that's, yeah, well, there you go. So that's really happening in a big way. So the All right. So people say, well, they're protected. Well, they kind of are and they're kind of not because they're outmanned, out-weaponized. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have poachers that come in with these giant automatic weapons, and they're not only to kill the rhinos, they're to kill people that might get in their way. Because there's just so much money involved in all of that. And some of the people that are paid to protect them can be paid more money by the people that pay them off. Is that all true?
Yeah, it is. And it's really unfortunate because the poachers in some areas have actually been linked to like drug cartels. And so they have more funds than the reserves have to pay these anti-poaching units to protect these rhinos.
It's really scary, though, to me. I mean, even a zoo rhino. Did you read about that?
Yeah, there's been some really unfortunate attacks in a couple different zoos of rhinos. So it's sad to think that they're not even safe in a zoo environment.
And to some extent, so I want to talk. So a rhinoceros is not a rhinoceros is not a rhinoceros. There aren't many podcasts. If you're listening to this, you're hearing history. Because there are not many podcasts. There's a podcast they say about everything, right? I don't know how many there are that go through the various species of rhinos, as we're about to do. So let's do that. This is going to be fun. Or my idea of fun, anyway. We'll see if it's your idea of fun. So we'll start with the most well-known, which are the black rhino and the white rhino, which, interesting enough, have little to do with the color of the rhino. So explain all that.
So white rhinos are the largest species of rhino.
And they are big.
They are very big.
When you stand next to one, you realize it's like a tank.
They can be about 6 or 7 feet tall and weigh over a few thousand pounds. So they're very, very large animals. They're actually the second largest land mammal behind the elephant. So white rhinos got their name not because they're white. White rhinos and black rhinos are actually almost the same color. They're kind of a dark grayish, brownish color.
The color really depends on the mud they happen to be laying
in. Yeah, they
really
wallow in mud a lot, so that helps kind of with their coloration. But the white rhino, it's believed, got its name from a Dutch word for white, or for wide.
They're wide lip.
Yes, they have a wide lip. They have a wide square lip that they're used to graze in the grass. And whereas black rhinos have a pointy prehensile lip, and they're more browsers, so they pull leaves off of trees and branches and things like that.
And they're slightly smaller.
They are slightly smaller.
But they both have horns.
They do both have two horns each. Those are the African species of rhinos, so they live kind of in the same habitats all throughout Africa. South Africa has the largest concentration of white rhinos. It also has the largest concentration of poachers, unfortunately. Black rhinos are mostly in eastern Africa.
Now, last time I checked, there were more black rhinos surviving than white?
No, there's actually more white rhinos. White rhinos are the most successful of the species. There's about 20,000 of them left in the wild. There's only about 5,000 black rhinos.
Okay.
There is a subspecies of the white rhino, the northern white rhino. There's only 3 of those individuals left in the entire world, and they live under 24-hour armed guard in Kenya.
What?
Yeah, so the southern white rhino is the more prolific of the white rhinos, so there's roughly 20,000 of them.
So with 3 left, if they're protected genetically now, once they reproduce, we're talking about the same genes, same genes. So even if they were all protected and medically got lucky and lived to a ripe old age, there's still a huge concern.
Yeah, that's no genetic diversity.
They're going nowhere. Yeah. So they're going to disappear.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the male, unfortunately, is already 42, so he's probably nearing the end of his lifespan. And the 2 females are younger, but if there's no male to breed with them,
can the guy still do it?
You
don't get that question every day.
I know. He probably could, but I know one of the females actually has some health problems where she probably couldn't withstand being mounted by a male. It would probably injure her, Yeah, it's looking pretty bleak for that subspecies, unfortunately.
But the news continues to be bad. So as we move around, so when we think of rhinoceros, and mostly what we see in zoos are the black or the white rhino. Mm-hmm. They're from Africa, as you said. But there are other rhino species as well.
Yes.
Yes.
There's, in Asia, it's home to the other 3 species of rhinos, the Indian or greater one-horned rhino. And then you also have the Sumatran rhino and the Javing rhino.
Now, the greater one-horned rhino, I have seen in zoos, not in America, as I recall, but I have seen, I'm trying to think of
there
which zoo.
There are a few in America.
Are there?
Yeah, not very many, but
I've just never been
to zoos that have them.
Yeah, I've never. However, in Europe, I have, and they're almost as big as the white rhino, as I remember, and they're they almost appear bigger. There's something about them. I don't know what it is.
They have those armory plates, yeah. I think. Their body is very plated. It almost looks like it's divided into three sections. So I think that makes them look bigger and bulkier.
Maybe.
Because of that.
And they're so prehistoric looking.
They are.
Even more than the other rhinos, if you've never seen those guys. And then the other rhinos that you mentioned, the Javan and Sumatran, are somewhat smaller and live in the forest in general.
Yeah, so they live in Indonesia, and they're the two most endangered species of rhinos.
Do you have any idea what their numbers are for those two?
Javan rhino, they estimate there's around 32 left in the world.
What?
And that's an estimate because they're so hard to find. 100% of the population lives in one reserve, but they're very elusive, which is good and bad. It's great because then poachers can't find them, but it's bad because then we can't find them.
Right.
So it's really hard to know. So at that reserve, they do have a lot of cameras set up, and they try to track their numbers that way through camera traps.
Sure.
And then there's the Sumatran rhino, who their numbers are around 60 to 70, so a little bit more populated. And again, 100% of the world's population is now in one centralized area in Indonesia. And so they're currently working on a breeding program in a semi-captive environment there.
Jeez. That's really sad, though. But you're working hard to protect them. So before we talk about what you're doing, what's the world doing? So there are organizations like the World Wildlife Fund and other large organizations that have made efforts to protect them. Do you think that's the answer? Do you think it's about educating the public to care? What do you guys personally think?
It's definitely both. Protection is a big one. They definitely need these protected areas to live in because it's just not safe for them to be unmonitored, unfortunately. But I think education is definitely a very large component of saving them. Especially the locals in the areas that have rhinos need to know that these animals are valuable to their environment, not only for, you know, just helping the actual ecosystem, but also for tourism. People pay to go to Africa on safaris. You want to see the big five. You know, a rhino is part of the big five. And if you have to change that to the big four, you're
it's
losing
the
something
same.
There.
Yeah.
So,
What can be done, if anything, do you think, to devalue their horns? I mean, that's where it's at. So if the rhino had no value to kill, they'd still have problems because they have all the problems of habitat destruction. Perhaps climate change is affecting some of these animals as scientists are beginning to look at all that. But nevertheless, now it's like, what do you do? So if there were no demand for that horn and it was worth 2 cents and not 2 million or whatever that price is, then I would think that would make a difference. Do you guys have any ideas as to how that can happen? Or that's the magical question.
It's so hard. That's where you have to hit the demand. And unfortunately, I just don't see that going away because the Asian cultures have these traditions. And I mean, they go back hundreds of years of this myth that the rhino horn cures all these ailments. And it's just very hard to break a tradition, even with all these scientific discoveries that rhino horn is made of hair and nail, you know, and it doesn't cure anything. These people that have these traditional beliefs are going to stick with their traditional beliefs over something that some scientist says. So it's just very hard to penetrate that.
But there hasn't
surface.
Been one case of cancer, not one.
I know.
Or anything.
I know.
Not a common cold that's gone away. Now, if you take some rhino horn, whatever that means, and you wait 6 days, yes, the cold will go away. But other than that, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just that's what a lot of these organizations are doing is trying to stop the consumers from buying this product. They're trying. Wild Aid is one of the organizations. I know they have a whole campaign that they're trying to, you know, hit the consumers. They're doing these PSAs and these commercials.
You mean the consumers in Southeast Asia?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're trying to explain to them that, you know, these
products. Do you think as the older people die out in that part of the world, that their old ideas may die with them?
It's a possibility. We can hope for that. It's one of those things I think we'll just have to wait and see. But I know poaching did slightly decrease in South Africa between 2015 and 2016, only by about 100 or so rhinos. But I mean, at least that's something.
Yeah.
And it's just we just need to keep getting those numbers down and getting the number of rhino births up. We need the births to outweigh the deaths.
So I just posted something on my blog, which is where you guys every day, I'm sure, go for information about pets. But I do on occasion post something that's a bit out of the ordinary. You know, we know animals can use tools, right? Some. We know great apes can do that. I mean, Jane Goodall famously figured that out decades ago when she saw chimpanzees using leaves and sticks to get to termites and licking the termites off that stick. And zoos now use this all the time in their enrichment for a variety of different species, not only primates. The fact that a variety, a wide variety of animals can use tools. So I have this video that I showed of an elephant. And according to the description in the YouTube, you tell me if this is right, they said there's been a historic war between elephant and rhino that they consider themselves arch enemies. And you see, dramatic, huh? And you see an elephant, I think a female elephant, but I'm not sure, an elephant, African elephant, with a huge, huge branch or a log. I mean, it's large. No problem for an elephant to carry in a trunk. Tossing it toward the rhino. Like they're standing off against each other. And then the elephant goes, brrr! Now hold it. That did not sound like an elephant.
Great elephant impression.
No, that was a very poor elephant. No, that was very bad. It sounded like a dying seal, perhaps, but not an elephant. So the elephant does. Can you guys do an elephant?
No.
Nope.
They refuse to do an elephant. You're professionals. You guys should be able to do an elephant.
So I'm a carnivore keeper, so I don't work with elephants. So.
Oh, you guys have it. Well, we could talk about no elephants in zoos. That's a whole different thing. So the elephant does a sound that I cannot reproduce, clearly, and then with its trunk, lunges or tosses. I don't know what the right word is. Hurls this giant log thing with very poor aim toward the rhino, and the rhino sees it coming at him a little bit, which I'll talk about in a second, and just runs the other way. So what's interesting to me about this video is that the elephant is oddly, no idea, I can't explain, using a tool. So questions here. Do you find in working with animals that a surprising number are smarter than we might think and use tools in different ways? And secondly, or maybe firstly, answer this one first. Do elephants and rhinos have a feud like the Hatfields and McCoys?
They've never told me about it, so I'm going to say probably not. They do sometimes cross habitats, and so sometimes if you're going to see any type of aggression, it may just be, well, first off, rhinos do have very poor eyesight, so if they're going to go after an animal, usually it's just because they don't know what's coming at them, and it's because they're startled. And an elephant she may have been protecting her young or something like that. I think that's a little bit more logical than that.
You know, I was talking to someone once who told me who a gamekeeper at a reserve in Africa, and he said one of the problems rhinos have, of course, the biggest problems are everything we talked about, but one of the problems they have is they starve to death sometimes. I said, how? He said they charge at something, they smell something, they don't see it really. And then their head is down and their horn gets embedded in a tree and they can't get out. So could you see that happening actually with rhinos?
It's a possibility.
They charge
they
and ask questions later.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They do have that poor eyesight. So if something does startle them, their first reaction, it's that fight or flight instinct, and they have the fight instinct. So they're going to charge at it instead of running away from it. And yeah, I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, bowling with rhinos. So as we talked about earlier, and our producer, Elif, was disappointed to hear because she was hoping in one lane maybe she could bowl, and in the next lane over, like in a Fred Flintstone episode maybe, there could be a rhinoceros bowling. I don't know how that would work or whether the bowling alley would be insured for that.
Probably not.
No, I'm thinking not. Yeah. So how does bowling with rhinos work?
So it's actually bowling for rhinos.
Oh,
but that's okay.
That's where we went wrong.
Yes, but it would be great if the rhinos could bowl with us. But yes, that definitely would not go over very well. So we are actually members of the American Association of Zookeepers, which is a national nonprofit organization, and we're part of the Lincoln Park chapter based here in Chicago. So we're just a bunch of people in the animal care field, and we're very committed to conservation and, you know, teaching people about conservation and also professional development within our field and things like that.
I respect so much.
Thank you.
I really do. I mean, you guys save animals all the time. And the other thing that happens is the human-animal bond connection that you make with those that you care for is quite incredible. And when something bad happens and you mourn, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's because folks sometimes criticize zoos and say, well, they should be out in the wild. And I say, where? Because for a lot of animals, there is nowhere. And for a surprising number of species, their only hope is for zoos. And right now, there are too many, but nevertheless many species that only exist in zoos that I don't think people know about. I also don't think that people know that zoos spend resources that they do studying animals. Lincoln Park Zoo, for example, has a program where they support vaccinating African wild dogs for rabies, not only to save that, we hope save, that endangered species, but also rabies can be communicated to all sorts of other species,
yes,
including people. Mm-hmm. So that's huge that the zoo is doing that. And that's just one thing. The Lincoln Park Zoo and Brookfield Zoo here support research in a variety of different ways for a long list of species. I'm talking about financially support people that are out in the field, which helps our world. So anytime people give me a hard time about zoos, I'm happy to say I give them a hard time because I think zoos do so much good. Never mind that education component, because how many millions of visitors visit? Zoos are the most visited entertainment venue in America that there is, if you add up all the zoos and all the people that go to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the education that people get, it's the only way so many of us, especially who live in an urban environment, have an opportunity to even understand what a woolly monkey might be,
yeah, exactly,
or whatever the species may be. So I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, bowling, no worries.
Bowling for rhinos. That's where we were.
So
tell me
rhinos.
About it.
So it is the largest fundraiser that AZAC, the American Association of Zookeepers, throws every year.
It's all over the country, right?
It is all over the country.
Yeah.
It actually started back in 1990 with just one AZAC chapter out in Kansas City. So it was just a very small event. The keepers in Kansas City just really wanted to kind of get the world more aware of the plight of rhinos and really do something about rhino conservation, but they didn't have the financial means to do that. So they were like, oh, we're going to throw this fundraiser and, you know, we'll have a bowl-a-thon. So they did it in 1990. They raised about $1,500, which is good. You know, it's
something.
Not too shabby.
Yeah,
it's definitely something. And then the national organization of AZAC decided, hey, this is a pretty great idea. We're going to start this nationally. So now today, in 2017, there are over 80 chapters throughout the U.S. and Canada that participate in Bowling for Rhinos every year.
Do you have any idea how much they raised last year?
Last year, it's roughly over $600,000 was raised.
And where does it go specifically, aside from hiring coaches to make rhinos better bowlers?
Actually, the great thing about this event is 100% of the proceeds go to those conservation efforts. None of it is used for administrative costs or anything like that. All the money goes back into these conservation programs to save the environments and the rhinos and all the other animals that live in them.
Now, so this is just a bunch of zookeepers that are bowling, or is the public invited?
It's open to everybody. The zookeepers and the volunteers were the ones that organize it, but we open it to everyone, and that's why we're so grateful that you had us here on your show. We're trying to branch out and get more people in the Chicagoland area aware of this event, and hopefully get
you
guys to
come out.
Well, next year
I'll do a better job, but I'll do a blog post on it as well.
Yes, that would
by
be
the
great.
Way. So tell me the date of the – now, so you know, I mean, this is a podcast, so a podcast will air – in perpetuity, is that the correct way to say it? So
sure.
You'll be on forever. People will be able to hear this.
Excellent.
You know? And I hope that in 10 years it's still available to hear. Probably it will be. But I hope in 10 years the news is better for the rhinoceros, for any of the species. But for those that are listening right here and now, you have an opportunity. What day? August 15th?
Yes, August 15th. It's going to be at Diversey River Bowl.
In Chicago.
Yeah.
And that's Diversey at around Elston?
Logan.
Elston. You're right. Logan.
Area.
You're right. Yeah.
And even if you don't like to bowl, it's okay. You can just come and support. We have a lot of really fun stuff. We have a local special guest, Rich Kaz, who many know
Svengoolie.
As Svengoolie. So he's been very generous, and he donates his time to come and visit us and help us at this important
what
event.
What does he do?
He's usually on the mic the whole time.
He
so
scares
it's
people?
Very entertaining.
Yes, he is. He's great. That's wonderful.
So we also, when you come, there is a ticket
when
price.
When I come?
Yeah, you're
or
coming
anybody.
Too.
Oh, I might.
If you don't want to bowl, there is still a $15 fee to come in because
sure.
it does include food and drinks.
And it raises money. It's
and,
a fundraiser
yeah, exactly.
after all.
So yeah. we do accept general donations there, but also we have a lot of great auction and raffle prizes. We have African safaris that we raffle off.
Wow.
We have a 50-50 raffle. We have a Cancun vacation.
Ooh.
We have airline tickets, passes to Walt Disney World, SeaWorld, Busch Gardens, out-of-state attractions, in-state attractions.
That's wonderful.
Local breweries. So there's a lot of really fun stuff there, and everybody can find something there.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I'm saying this without looking, but if my calendar's free, I will be there. I don't
Excellent.
Even know if I'm in town. But if I am, I will be there because I want to support this. I mean, it's really really important. And, you know, I get asked this question a lot, and I'll ask you guys too. So above and beyond bowling for rhinos is one way to do it. But I get asked, okay, I know what's happening halfway on the other side of the world. How can I make a difference here? So yes, supporting fundraisers like this, that's an easy way to do it because we're only talking about what? You said 15 bucks?
That's just to come. But even if you're unable to come, we are accepting donations online.
And how, by the way, I'll let you give that URL in a second. How do you sign up to – so let's say I really like to bowl. Mm-hmm. How do I sign up?
Well, everything right now is online, so you can buy any ticket, whether you want to be a bowler or a non-bowler. Or again,
can I bring a whole
–
because some of the people have cool uniforms and everything. They have
yeah.
teams.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a whole bowling team can
oh,
come?
Yeah, yep. if you want to bring multiple teams. this year we have reserved the entire bowling alley, so we really want to bring a lot of bowlers and
okay.
sell out.
Now, I'm not allowed, am I?
Absolutely.
To bowl?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, you haven't seen me bowl. So last time I bowled, I got a strike.
Well,
there
that's
you go.
Better than what we do. Why do you
well,
yeah.
well,
run the event?
It wasn't. The thing is, it wasn't in my lane. It's
well,
supposed to be.
That might be frowned upon.
You know,
yes, it was.
But you still got it. So look at
I
the plus
think that's the way I think yeah. about it. All right. So that's August 15th. It begins at 6 o'clock.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And with that, $15 include. Did you say beer?
It does not include alcoholic beverages, but they are available for purchase.
Okay, and pizza. You said
mm-hmm.
that. Okay. Yep. And the silent auction with all the amazing things that you talked about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. So the Lincoln Park Zoo is open 365 days a year. It is, after all, my favorite four-letter word, free.
Yes.
So yep. parking isn't, but then in Chicago, that's to be expected.
Yep.
But you could take public transportation there easily enough. It is a great zoo in the heart of a city. I mean, there aren't any zoos like that that I can think of. And it's the oldest zoo in America, unless you talk to someone from Philadelphia, because then you get in this fight. They'll say, we're older. And then we say, well, we're older. No, you're older.
Yeah.
You know, but it's an amazing, amazing thing. What is the best thing for you? When you were a kid, did you think that I want to work at a zoo, Caitlin?
I did. So I actually grew up in the Chicagoland area, and my dream was always to work in a local zoo. I went to the local zoos growing up. So for me, I always loved animals. And I
Did you watch Lister Fisher on Ark in the Park?
I did. So, and I would actually take pictures of the animals and of the information sign and make my own little, like, animal encyclopedia. And I don't think my mother understood at the time what it meant going forward.
I totally get that. So then you went, did you go to college?
I did, yeah. So I got my bachelor's degree in biology, and then I did a few different volunteer internship opportunities, as most zookeepers do have to do, because it's an extremely competitive field. A lot
it
of
is
people
now.
Want to play with animals or take care of animals, but you really have to put in the time to kind of get to where you can actually get paid for it.
Well, and actually understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, it is a profession, you know. So that is wonderful. Les Fisher, I had him on a recent podcast. And he's now 95, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, do I have to come all the way down the WG? I said, no, no, no. We could do this one by phone. He did. And I think the day before, Betty White was celebrating her birthday. So and she's 94, I believe. So I said to Dr. Fisher, who was, if you don't know, the director of the Lincoln Park Zoo for decades, mm-hmm. and a Chicago celebrity, really, I said, you're the only one, I believe, on the planet who could look at Betty White, because I know they're buddies, that can call her, hey, how you doing, kid? He liked that joke a lot. And for you?
For me, when I was a kid, I went through all sorts of phases wanting to do all kinds of different things with animals. I wanted to be a dog breeder or a horse trainer, a dolphin trainer, all kinds of stuff, a veterinarian at one point. But then I just really developed this passion for cats, tigers, snow leopards, lions. They just really became my passion. And I discovered that that was what I really wanted to do. And I was like, how can I do this? And I was like, oh, a zoo. So,
well, we're about to run out of time here, but very quickly, I talk at veterinary conferences around the country, around the world, really. And one of the topics I talk about is enrichment, environmental enrichment. And you guys have been on to that long before. Pet owners, I mean, you know, and I once said in front of a crowd that zoos do a better job of enriching the environment of their animals than like the snow leopard at a zoo or a Galapagos penguin even at a zoo. I don't know if Galapagos penguins are at zoos, so that was a bad species. But a rockhopper penguin at a zoo, better. Yes, yeah. I know. I don't know where that came from. There is such a thing as a Galapagos penguin, but that's all right. But you guys do a better job with all of that than most people with a dog or a cat at home. And that doesn't make much sense. And then all these people applauded. And I said, together, they were all sitting together. I said, who are you guys? And they said, oh, we're all zookeepers that are here for the conference. They appreciated that.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate so much what you do.
Thank you.
Hope that people come out August 15th if you're in the Chicago area. August 15th, 2017. To support Bowling with Rhinos at the Diversey River Bowl, 2211 West Diversey, and that is at, we just said it.
Diversey and Logan.
Thank you, yeah. Diversey and Logan,
yes.
Thanks.
They free, you can take public transportation.
And they have free parking.
They do, yes.
It might fill up. I hope it does.
Yeah. So
but,
do we.
Yeah, exactly. But then they have street parking,
yes,
around the corner, I yes, happen to know. So thank you very much, guys, for the work you do.
Thank you.
You.